of those pods from the fruit company making cell phones.
Yeah.
And there's that's great, and you can get an amazing audio experience from a really high-end pair of headphones, but when you're in open air, two-channel, and it's set up right, so you get the center image, the sound stage.
It's all sort of holographic.
It's emotional, right? Because your brain's like, I just don't understand what's happening here.
DeVore Fidelity, the show partner of Not an Audiophile, the podcast. DeVore Fidelity has become one of the most acclaimed high-end companies in the world. And having heard the loudspeakers many times, I know why. They're all still handcrafted in Brooklyn, New York. We love how this iconic brand captures the excitement and breath of the sound. Nothing brings you closer to the music than DeVore Fidelity. For a retailer near you, visit DeVoreFidelity.com. We are back, Not an Audiophile, the podcast, episode 53, season 3. Recently, David Carrazza and myself, Andrew Hutchison, were invited to a very significant celebration, the 80th birthday of both Klipsch and Onkyo, two, of course, well-known brands that are 80 years old. Kind of astounding. We saw some new products, amazing, the rebuilding, if you like, of the Onkyo range, and as far as two-channel, and what's happening with Klipsch. We listened to all sorts of different things. It was all very exciting. And the most interesting part was Marcus Buckler spoke to us at length the next morning about all sorts of things, what's happening now, what's coming out, and the future. Have a listen. Hey, we're here with Marcus Buckler. Marcus, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Happy to be here.
You certainly look great, considering what happened last night. David is also with us. David?
Hello.
Hello.
Good to be back.
Yes. It is good to be back. There's so many things to talk about. Last night, so it's the 80th anniversary of the two brands that you're master of. Well, really, what's your role?
So the simple way to put it, I'm the training manager.
Yes.
Which was not a role previously had before the premium audio brands came together.
Yes.
So Klipsch, Onkyo, Integra. And I'm basically a trainer. That's the easy way to put it. I teach products. I like to say product education because I make it a point to live with everything that we make. I have a rule in my house. If it doesn't exist under my umbrella, it doesn't exist in my home. So I'm forced to live with whatever we have, the good, the bad, the indifferent.
Well, there is... Okay, so just to outline for the listener, you very kindly invited us to a little soiree last night. It was very both informative and enjoyable. And I was probably most amazed by just simply the broad range of products that Klipsch have. Like, I mean, I knew you had Baktiv speakers and you had the old classics and your Heritage series and what have you. But, you know, what I didn't know is about the connection that you've got with Nissan, which is, I guess it's almost a fashion in the audio industry now to get your brand in a car, but I mean, in this case, it equates to Sirius sound, and that it doesn't always, it's not always the case, because a brand that was mentioned last night by your offsider,
it's a clean podcast.
A four-letter word.
We don't say four-letter words
starting with B, but I mean, I had a car once with a four-letter word starting with B audio system in it, and it was the most god-awful thing I'd ever heard. I mean, it was worse than their wave radio. It really was, because that's actually not a bad thing. But, it was... So I'm expecting big things of your Nissan audio system. But the thing is, you've got the outdoor speakers, you've got custom install stuff of all kinds. TV speakers. So your house must be... is the point I'm getting to. Your house is full of stuff, of audio gear. And you act as sort of a bit of a beta tester, I guess.
Is absolutely,
that, yeah. Now, we're going to quickly do a little bit of housekeeping. I mean, Klipsch, 80-year anniversary this year, which may be the oldest audio company in the world almost, I guess, that's functioning still.
I think there are a couple coming up on 80s.
Yes.
The either next year or very soon.
Yeah.
But from what I understand, we're the oldest current running
wow.
audio company. And wow. I could be wrong. The audience corrects me, but 80 years is a long time.
It is a long time. And let's face it, what state was the audio industry in 80 years ago? I mean, clearly, it's just out of
a
war.
A polite word would be fledgling.
Fledgling, absolutely. And so, so there's that. And then... So the ownership situation. Now, Klipsch, to my way of thinking, as someone who's been in the audio industry for a very long time, although you know not as long as Klipsch, I'm not that old. It's gone through waves, and in fact, in Australia, and probably even in America to a degree, there was a time it felt like 15, 20 years ago it was sort of in a bit of a lull. Then it came back,
mm-hmm.
and then... More recently, so there's a change of ownership again, and I feel from what you presented to us last night that you're on a huge crest of a wave at the moment. Well, not on a crest, developing into a crest.
Yeah. So I've been a part of other brands mm-hmm. on the manufacturer side before, and I think three different owner changes, whether that's acquisition or a company going public, where
yes.
you're owned by a shareholder now, yeah. which is, that's tough. Gentex, our new parent company, what's great about them is they knew what they were getting.
Yeah.
It's not a private equity firm that comes in to take your margin, yeah. spend it at the end of every month.
That would never happen.
Yeah, that would never happen, right? But I understand people want to make money. My experience, private equity, it's what a lot of companies are owned by, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the best home for audio brands.
So when you say private equity... So I always, you know, use the analogy like a room full of accountants buys a hi-fi company and in a period of 6 months destroys it. That's private equity?
So...
And what is the difference between that and what you're...
That's how it feels.
Yeah.
Right? You
yeah.
always think it's a bunch of accountants because you're not their only brand. And when, yeah. when you look at what is the perceived margin rate of a passive speaker, I mean, that's where, you know... The accountant's pants get a little tight, and they're really excited about it, right?
Yeah, of course they
look at what it costs
in the factory, but
you've got to get the product out there. You got to innovate, mm. and that costs a lot of money on the other side of it.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
being owned by a company that knew what they were getting and is a very, very solid company.
Yes,
you know they're a OEM manufacturer for automotive technology.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
and they have. Thousands of employees. They're based out of Michigan.
Okay.
They have consistent growth. It's kind of like hitting the jackpot.
It sounds like it.
It really does. And not to, you know, it's still honeymoon phase, but they want us to be better. That's the consistent message I hear from them. You know, it's whether it's yeah. our booth at an event, the type
yeah.
of product we make. You
yes.
know, they want us to go up market. And you know, a lot of times when we have a meeting. Anyone that, whether it's marketing, training myself, product, you know, they ask, what would it take to get to where you want to get this to?
And the reason why I bring this up is not because we want to have a boring conversation about corporate, you know, business. Is more what it can do, what this great situation can do for the potential buyer or listener of your. Very interesting loudspeakers and other products, and we'll get to the other products, which of course is Onkyo. But we'll get back to that. The fact that you've got a budget to distribute properly, R&D is probably the most exciting thing. You can really move things mm-hmm. forward. I mean, it's just the fact that you can buy a product and know that it's going to be around. I mean, like because some of your products are not inexpensive and. You know, it'd be nice to think that there'd be someone there to support it.
Yeah.
And do you feel that this change of ownership is likely to be stable? Is that?
Yeah.
I mean, so, from what you're saying, it's absolutely stable.
Yeah, and I believe so. You know, my role reports up through, like, go-to-market,
uh-huh.
Because I'm the one-of-one trainer for them, and for me, that really was a win, and in the audio industry, I think our listeners would agree.
Mm.
If you're on the sales side or manufacturer side, there are waves. There are waves where you're having a great time. They could last 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. And, you know, when I talked to my boss, who is a very good friend of mine, you know, we, after this acquisition, we're like, we're getting ready to go on a run.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
let's, before we get too busy, sit back and enjoy it.
Yep.
Just know this is the beginning of a long run. Because sometimes you're at the end of a long run with a brand you love and you love the people you're working with, and then ownership changes.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, this is going to be great. And everybody says that, right? All the executives are like, we're so excited. This is going to be what we wanted.
Well, it is what everyone says.
And before you know it, you're selling watches at the same time. You know, it's not, it's like, okay, I'll go to this tennis match and sell a watch. I don't know how we're going to incorporate this into audio. Not throwing shade at anybody, but you know, that did happen.
Yeah, we've covered off on the corporate ownership situation, but I think some more mature listeners perhaps are just like, oh, but what's happening with, you know, with who owns the company now, you know, like it's, so we've done that, very stable, tons of money, you're loving it, the future looks exceptionally bright. There's a million other questions somewhere along the way. Onkyo, I mean, and that's Onkyo because premium brands owned Onkyo, I understand. So therefore, they, when the new company took over
Premium Audio Company.
Premium Audio Company. Obviously, Onkyo's thrown in. Now, there's a lot. So Onkyo's on the is renewed as well,
mm-hmm.
in a way that I mean, wow. I mean, so it's also 80 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, is that a bizarre coincidence or?
I don't know that it was, and again, the purchase of Onkyo was before I got here. I don't know that they knew,
no.
we're going to go get this brand because it was...
Because it's the same age.
From what I understand, the story goes, and I was a lover of Onkyo. I've had moments in my career where Onkyo, even when I was a dealer selling it, was not my favorite brand.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had their turmoil, and I think we got them at the right time. They needed a new home.
Yeah.
That's a big name in audio, and it's the perfect scenario for Onkyo.
And well, it is, surely. Yeah. I mean, it is for probably any brand in some ways as far as having some properly funded R&D, but, I mean, and probably if you want to play in, and here's another thing that I noticed last night, the feature set of your products is mind-blowing, the amount of digital compatibility with all ways of feeding audio around digitally and upside down and inside out. You know, those active speakers, those new ones you've got, mm-hmm. which sound quite impressive, even in a fairly unpleasant listening space that you had them in last night. Kind of an empty room in a way.
Yeah, with a giant and a glass big space. Wall and ceiling.
Yes.
And polished concrete.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Great stuff.
And really, a pretty live room.
Yeah, yeah, very live room. And there was I don't want to go into minute detail of the sound of just those particular speakers, but the quality of the DSP and the cleanliness of the sound struck me and very well balanced. But there's something I want to say about this before I forget. Is that everything we listened to last night? So you had the active speakers, you had the sound bars, you had the Heritage range, of which you played the La Scala's, at least when I was listening, and you played a little outdoor speaker system, and then you played some computer speakers. They all sounded like Klipsch.
Yeah.
Is there a philosophy in there somewhere that Mr. Klipsch, way back, I mean, he happened across, probably by design, a certain balance of sound. I mean, obviously the initial Klipshorn loudspeaker from 1946 or 47 or what have you was a very efficient loudspeaker. So it sounded probably a certain, well, we know it sounds a certain way. It sounds like a Klipshorn, right? So is there a lot of that DNA still after 80 years is still sort of passed on and it's a goal of the designers to...
not just a goal... from my experience being here, without really listening to a lot of Klipsch previously, it's not a goal, it's a requirement. You know, we still have a gentleman named Roy Delgado.
Yeah.
He's our lead audio engineer. He doesn't like to call himself that. He calls himself the Chief Bonehead. Roy is an amazing person, if you ever meet him. He's so humble. He knows his stuff. He graduated from Texas.
Mm-hmm.
university and, you know, applied to be an audio engineer for directly for PWK.
Okay.
And he carries all of that lineage through. And when it comes to
So he's been there a long time.
And we have a great Klipsch product team. And we have some new guys. We have Andy Spala, Ryan Hansen. These guys are all Klipsch, and they make sure that these things sound like Klipsch. Even if it's powered by Onkyo, it's got to have that Klipsch DNA. And we have a whole separate group over in Osaka, Japan, that does the Onkyo side.
Yes.
And so if we make an Onkyo speaker, like our Creator series you guys heard, there it's a completely different sound, different customer, and then you've got the Klipsch sound.
Yeah. Well, David has many questions about Onkyo, but one of them that we were talking about earlier, and we are going sideways here and we've gone off the rails as usual, but you mentioned Osaka. So, I mean, Onkyo went into some kind of almost hibernation. It was almost just put on the shelf for a bit, it feels like.
Yeah.
Now it's been reborn to some degree. Mm-hmm. Is that how you would characterize?
Yeah, and I'm going to warn our listeners and you guys, I'm a trainer by trade. So if you ask me a simple question, I will give you a 12-minute answer if you let me.
But hang on, it's meant to be the other way around. Yeah.
No, so, please go ahead.
Yeah, so... bringing it back to the Onkyo story, you know, when Onkyo was founded in 46, you know, it was in that CE audio world. But what they were really known for in like the 50s, they would take this pair of massive horns to concert venues.
Yes,
and play two-channel. We're talking a six-foot-long horn.
Okay, yeah.
And so it was still two-channel, horn-loaded. They made some horn-loaded speakers back in the day.
Oh, we're talking Onkyo now.
In Onkyo, and the horn-loaded, the golden era of two channel. And when it got to Premium Audio Company, I think in life there are moments where two brands link arms and there's no rhyme or reason behind it. It just kind of happened from a situation. And I think it's just a perfect match. Mm. And like what you said about Onkyo, when I got here as a trainer, I wanted to deep dive into AVRs because I've previously worked with an AVR brand, a couple of them that are very, very good. And what really shocked me, you mentioned the feature set. It wasn't just the feature set. It was the simplicity of use from a customer standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I remember looking at it, not knowing anything about the product and going, this is going to be easy.
Mm-hmm.
But I have no idea how we have not been screaming this from the rooftop. Well, they didn't have a lot of money to do that in the past. So when you carry over what Onkyo has been doing, and also a brand, I have to say, that's been known for being the first at a lot of these technologies. So,
can you give us a list?
Yeah, so for example, THX, you know, back in the day, THX certified receiver was a big deal. We were the first THX certified receiver, the first dual recording cassette deck. We made the first in-home Dolby Atmos all-in-one box for a customer. Works with Sonos, not make it works with Sonos, be a certified works with Sonos partner. That's a big deal. That's an ecosystem that is massive. Customers love it. And then today, like with our powered monitors you guys heard last night, I have not done all of the research. I don't currently know of a powered monitor that does Dolby Atmos virtualization. So that's the kind of stuff. Now, from a first, I'm almost positive. I'm going to say 99% for the listeners. They can prove me wrong. But it's also the first where an AVR brand designed and built the internals for a powered monitor from a legendary passive loudspeaker. And that design and the components inside is the difference. And my number one thing, if you guys have not, our listeners, if you haven't heard them when they come out, anytime you have a powered monitor system and you hook it to a TV, and you watch a movie, you're going to be playing the throttle game, right? Especially if you're listening with, like, I'll listen with my wife.
Yeah.
We're watching Top Gun Maverick, and they're whispering. I crank up the volume, and then the jets take off, and I got to turn it down.
Yes,
and
indeed.
Yeah. Now with this, what really shocked me is the vocal presence. It just stays right where you need it,
no matter
how loud you're playing. It's sorcery, and I'm not as technical as probably a lot of trainers are, but they're phenomenal. And that goes back to using an AVR company to design the internals. And that's a massive step. We started it with the Flexus soundbar system. And that's another one that blew my mind. They work, they last longer, but the vocal presence is just top notch. And that comes from a horn loaded tweeter in our Core 200. It's one of the best. I would, and I'll say this again, going on a tangent, but those two pairing together, we're going to make more and more products that do that, because the simplicity for the end user, the customer,
yes,
that doesn't know the story, doesn't know a lot of either brand, they just bought it because someone recommended it, you know, they're going to have a great experience.
Yeah, that's the question on my mind with all of these different audio systems and the compatibility that you offer. But how does it work? It's got to be, I mean, ultimately, in an ideal world, it's kind of kept sort of simple. It kind of just works. And clearly, you've got the power to control that by having both brands working together. I know David wanted to ask, the Japanese connection with Onkyo, is it, it's intact, R&D for Onkyo is?
So I'm not gonna give specific numbers, but one of the things that I bring up on our trainings is I've seen the R&D graphs,
mm-hmm.
and when you look at Onkyo and the amount of money spent on R&D, it's an upward swing.
Sensational.
And from what I've seen, it's not like we double it every year, but it's a massive increase every year into Onkyo. And those guys over there are phenomenal. They come to the shows, they're responsive, even though there's a big time difference. If I need answer on a firmware update, there's a wonderful guy named Alec that answers everything we need. And one of my favorite stories of Alec is we were at our sales meeting and we had the Icon series that's out now, but at the time wasn't. We want to show it to all of our favorite dealers here in the States. Actually, technically worldwide, they come from all over. And he landed, he must have had incredible jet lag, and the thing needed a firmware update. And he was having a tough time with it. And we're talking cocktail hour, it's probably 8 or 9 o'clock. I had a glass of very nice grape juice in my hand, and I walk in the room, and I'm getting ready to run some demos. And he's like, just 1 second. And he's just sitting Indian style on the floor, waiting on this thing to update. He's like, I'll be back in 30 minutes. Went and got a refill. Came back and he is asleep, sitting up, staring at the amplifier. Nard. The guy wouldn't leave.
Just that's a great
story. And I was like, Alec, tap out, go get some
rest. Commitment.
Not that big a deal. The previous firmware still sounded pretty good.
Yeah.
You know? But that's the thing.
Well, he put, well,
Japanese precision.
Yes, absolutely. And they put effort in and they wanted to show it off, I guess. I think what I'm getting at is, for the sake of the listener, is that these companies, sometimes people assume, you know, everything's made in China by a subcontracted manufacturer or something, and this is not the case with your brands, it seems. So my understanding is that the American made products and your headquarters is in the same building that the founder bought in 1947 or something.
I mean, it's one of the older buildings there.
Yeah.
And I'll give another shout out to our parent company. So when you get a new parent company, the proof's in the pudding. But one of the first things they wanted to do was get down to Hope.
Yes.
They took a tour.
Yes.
Which the executives do a lot. They're actually fantastic people. And they were like, we need to, one, take care of the employees a little bit more. So make sure, if they haven't been elevated or gotten a little pay bump, let's take care of that.
Yes.
Yep. But at the same time, look at the building. So they just got a brand new roof.
Yeah, okay.
We're updating the equipment. We're looking at different areas of products we make. Maybe we need to make them differently or invest in more material and like CNC machines, stuff like that, to make what we're going to have going forward.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, one of the reasons people love Klipsch, especially a product built in Hope, is they are handmade by people that really care. Mm. Hope is a tiny, tiny town. And most people have been there for 10, 20, 30, 40 years.
Yes.
And the level of build quality that comes out of there is just phenomenal. So Hope is important, and we're investing a lot more into that. And that's... it's a big part of where we're going to go in the future.
And you've got like a museum.
Yeah.
Is there a factory tour or
there
something?
Is a museum. There is an annual pilgrimage.
Okay.
Where that sounds vaguely religious.
Klipsch fans from all over
Yeah.
come down. We have one coming up again. We had to postpone it because that brand new roof was in an ice storm and had a little collapse.
Oops.
Wow. Yeah,
we had to move some stuff around, and we are going to do it again. We were trying to do it on PWK's 80th birthday.
Yeah, okay.
So we do a press event. We were going to lay a wreath on his grave, and we'll do it again later in the year, I think September, October time. So it's wild the following that Klipsch had. And I say that as someone that's been in the industry a long time, and I was not I was not aware until I got here that there is a fan base that is just maniacal, because it is a different way to attack high-end audio. And I've worked for previous manufacturers. You know, some of the best in the business, I always say they are maniacal hunters for this elusive thing called distortion, right? And they build big cabinets and heavy speakers, and they have amplifiers that make incredible amount of power or very clean power, and they work at that. And Paul W. Klipsch's famous saying is no bullshit, right? He had a, you know, the story goes, you know, he had a lapel pin he'd put on the underneath his lapel,
yes,
and it just said bullshit. And so we hand out little yellow pins that say bullshit on them. Sorry for the too many BS's. And if he was at a audio meeting and someone was talking marketing,
yes,
you know, we call this, right? He would just flip it over without saying a word. He had a really cool sense of humor, very dry. And that was it. And also the story goes he once did it to his pastor or priest in church.
Okay.
And the second time he was asked to leave.
Yeah, all right.
Can't imagine why.
Yeah. You're clearly a character. And obviously, from what I understand, you know, a broad range of skills, but obviously he was, like all of us sitting right here now, all attracted for good or bad reason or outcome to the audio biz, so to speak, or hi-fi equipment in general. I mean, obviously everyone starts off as a listener and an enthusiast, and if you really want to bathe in it, then you get into the business, I suppose. But it's an amazing history there. So to move sideways to Japan, so there's the facilities in Japan are in Osaka, and I'm going to admit that I don't remember whether Onkyo was always in Osaka, but I guess they were. I mean, is that
As far as I know, I believe that they've always been in Osaka.
All right, well, we'll leave that alone since none of us are experts on whether they... But the point
is... The timeline story I have has
the Onkyo business is happening in Osaka, though.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Now, we're going to take a two-second break. We'll be back with more serious questioning on the new Onkyo products and what's going on with Heritage.
March Audio. March Audio is a proud episode sponsor of the Not an Audiophile podcast. With a mission to provide superb technical performance and exceptional sound at modest prices, Alan March has designed a range of power amplifiers, a preamplifier, and a selection of stunning loudspeakers that you should check out now at marchaudio.com.
And folks, we're back with Marcus Buckler from, it's still called Premium Audio Company.
Yes, sir.
I got it.
Nailed
out
it.
Eventually.
All right.
So that's right. Nothing's really changed. It's just that company has a different owner, and in turn, that company owns Onkyo and Klipsch. We're both kind of keen on Onkyo.
Very much so.
We're also here with David, by the way, and myself, so David Carasa.
We've been hogging the microphone.
Yeah.
Hog away.
Onkyo.
Yeah, it's an interesting company. I mean, I'm old enough to remember what I would consider the golden years of two-channel, which I would consider the 80s. This is when people like Pioneer, Sony, remember Sony? Mm-hmm. They used to make hi-fi.
Yeah.
Astonishing stuff. And a lot of other Japanese brands just made breathtaking pieces. And a lot of them were cost-no-object kind of devices too. Mm-hmm. The aesthetics, the UI, the UX were, you know, top-notch. And the sound was pretty glorious. And then a lot of them just simply went away. They simply went away.
Mm.
And I remember, just as a sideline here too, with Sony or Sony, whatever part of the world you are pronouncing that word, I remember distinctly, I went to the AES show, I think it was 1999 or 2000, I've told this story before, but basically I heard the first SACD prototype player, mm-hmm. and I was blown away. I thought, this is the future. Fantastic. And I heard...
Turns out...
Well, it turns out it wasn't.
Well, it kind of was in a way.
It kind of was, but...
Well, because high-res files, you've got tons of high-res compatibility.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it... It's just the optical disc sort of faded away.
Well, yeah.
Although it's back.
It's coming back.
It's coming back, just like vinyl magically came back from the dead 15 years ago or whatever. But we digress, as we do.
Well, it's an interesting thing. I don't want to digress, but a double digress, that sure. is known in the trade. But the fact that you have a small suite of new Onkyo products, Marcus, one of them is a CD player.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts?
Yeah, so... The CD player, all right.
And why is it not a turntable?
Well, don't know that we might not have a turntable.
Under development.
I didn't say that.
Nor did I.
Sorry, Vinny. No, so the CD player for Onkyo, I'll give you guys the nuts and bolts of it.
Mm.
We make a CD carousel.
Yeah, that's right.
And that product
is still available,
not,
hey?
It's not just a product. It is one of the highest-selling Onkyo products that we make.
Get out of here.
And, you know, when it's in a retail store,
yeah.
if it's on the shelf, it's gone that week, and they get another one. And
yeah,
it's wild because that means a customer. The customer is out there. Their CD player died, whether it was super high-end or just a simple carousel.
Yeah.
And they have this collection of CDs. And they're used to pushing a button, listening to my favorite track. I'm not worried about Wi-Fi. I'm not worried about an app. I know
Correct.
I push that button it plays my
Music
favorite
comes
song.
Out.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that customer needs that product replaced. And because everybody got out of it,
for sure,
we kept making it. And for the price, it's a solid, solid piece.
No, it is a good
So with the new Icon series, we built a more premium, full size.
Okay.
The C30 comes in silver or black to match the stack, like what we used to see, right? If I've got an integrated amp or a stereo and a preamp, it's the same size, same look, and it's in that Icon series, and it sounds phenomenal.
So this Icon series is what we saw last night. There's a fully featured digital preamplifier. When I say digital, it's got digital inputs. I'm going to ask you the important question. Does it convert analog inputs to digital and then back again? But you may not know. But annoyingly, it probably does. And obviously a power amp with beautiful looking VU meters. Is there an integrated amp as well?
There is.
Yeah, and the CD player.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a couple of little all-in-one units.
Yeah, two separate series. So we have our Icon series, which consists of our power amp with the VU meters.
Yes.
Not easy to make a futuristic company like Onkyo that's now...
Mm.
Looking to what can be in the future to go, hey, remember those old analog meters? We should put those back in. You know, a lot of renders of digital meters that look like analog, but we really wanted analog meters. And
yeah, well, they do look, the lighting was dim last night, but they looked analog to me.
Yeah.
They look great, actually. So that's that. And then the little... All-in-one units are not Icon series. That's
the Muse series.
Okay.
Yeah. So the Muse series is different customer base.
Mm-hmm.
So the Icon series, for me, that was the product I personally am most excited about. I've got a townhouse in Atlanta, Georgia, and big fireplace, shelves on the right, and I cleared out a shelf, and I let the wife know, this is my shelf. So I'm going to move the pictures up, the little plants, but that's where my Icon stack's going. So a power amp and a preamp. You know, they have XLR connections
and
so you get a balanced connection. I've got a pretty decent phono stage built in for the price point. It's solid, but we talked about the ease of use of Onkyo. All of the streaming services that we would expect from an Onkyo AVR, they're built into the preamp. So you're an endpoint for all the usual suspects in the streaming world.
Mm.
So if you've got your favorite app, you don't have to leave it. We upgraded the Onkyo app, which we spent a lot of time on, so it makes the end user's experience much, much easier. I talk about that a lot in the AVR world because an AVR remote has 9,000 buttons.
Oh, yeah.
I know what three of them do.
Yeah.
And I don't want a customer to use an AVR remote if possible. Download that app to a tablet and it feels like a control system did from 2013.
Yeah, yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. So all that's in our preamp. The integrated amp, you don't really lose much. That's what that product, I think, is going to do extremely well. Yes. You don't get the meters.
No.
You lose about 20 watts of power.
Still get Class AB amplification.
Class AB amplification. Yeah, yeah. You don't have the separation of your amp and electronics, which you can definitely benefit the experience, but it's all in one. It's about half the price, a little less than half the price of the stack of the Icon series.
And it's Rune compliant.
Yeah.
That's
Rune ready.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's really good.
Yeah, so it's got virtually everything. Like, so Spotify, Tidal, I think you mentioned that that service that's disappeared is not on it, but
Pandora.
Cobuzz.
Pandora, yeah. But so it's got Cobuzz.
We
have, as well,
Pandora we removed from a lot of our products.
Yeah, sure.
Not a big deal, though, because we have Apple AirPlay, Google Chromecast, so if they've got it on their phone, they can send it directly
to
it. It's
a thoroughly modern product in every way.
Yeah.
With VU meters.
the other that I need people to know this too, but you know, our AVR lineup, we have a lot, and we didn't use all the components from that. So when you look at like even the speaker terminals, they feel like a premium experience. Mm. So it's a different terminal on the back. Simple things like the removable power cord, right? Audiophiles like us, whether it makes a difference or not, I believe in power cords. I probably spent $200 on power cords.
That's a pretty sensible purchase in a power cord, unlike...
I've had a dealer loan me, you know, a $1,000 power cord before.
How'd you go with that?
I used it for a month. I loved it.
Power still got through, right?
I feel like I heard it, but I remember being like, well, I'm not...
You cynic.
I've got it. He got me. Like, I'm not keeping it. I'm taking it back. Yeah. That's out of my budget. And the world of audio, we like to tinker, you know, and there's that... You know, graph of diminishing returns. Is
of course.
It? If you can hear it, man, knock yourself out.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're a great believer of choose your own adventure at Not
Correct.
An Audiophile. Your own audio adventure. Something flashed into my head that I thought was a really great question, and then it shot out again. So you can have a crack, David, while I re-remember what it was. But it was brilliant.
Just getting back to Onkyo. I mean, given...
Oh, I know what it was about Marcus's house and his wife, but that's... Keep going.
Yes. It's my turn.
Your turn.
Okay. So basically, given the lineage of Onkyo and what it did back in the day, the new release of these products is actually very, very exciting and encouraging. And I was really knocked out, as we've just discussed, about A, the feature set, and B, the attention to detail, just cosmetically, with the products. They look really, really distinct and very, very attractive. So I'm just wondering, and you don't have to, we haven't signed NDAs or anything, but you don't have to divulge what's coming per se, but where do you think this is going? Do you think Onkyo is going to start pursuing that end of the market again with a diversity of products, or what's your feeling?
That's a good question. You know, on the manufacturer side, we can make the coolest products that we think we want to make, but at the end of the day, if they don't do well in the marketplace, the consumer doesn't want it.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
So now there's a lot of excitement behind Onkyo Icon series, so I hope we continue with that. You know, my spiel to a lot of people is this is the return to hi-fi for Onkyo. We're let's knock out the basics of what we didn't have in the marketplace. So the great integrated amp, we've got the power amp, preamp stack, CD player, and I hope we continue that. And a lot of it is from feedback from dealers, reviewers, of where they see the trends going. Like, I'd love to see two big monoblocks, you know, with a giant meter on each
with
side.
With a giant meter.
Yeah, I would love to see it. That's just me personally. But we are building stuff like that. I mean, at CES, we showed some renderings of our next lineup of AVR, which has a completely new look. We got a big screen in the middle.
Nice.
We have some prototypes. Now, again, these are not guaranteed to come out, wink, but we'll have a processor that can do big theaters, you know, 15 channel, 6 subwoofer type things.
Yeah, okay.
Dedicated power amps for theater.
Yes.
Which is, that's something we don't have right now, and I think that's a big opening into that marketplace for dedicated theaters in a house where you're not getting into the price point of a lot of the really elite brands,
which presenting a sort of a value for money solution in the upper end of the
And that's
but not the highest end of the
one of the benefits of Onkyo, and that's again one of the things I'm so excited about the Icon series is the price point of what you can get a separate stack and have VU meters, and at that and you're seeing other brands that do it, and they have the a lot of them are all in one, and there's some great examples out there, but the separate stack at that price point I think is really exciting.
Do we I don't think we know what the it doesn't. Hey, we're an international podcast. You can tell us the US price. You probably know what that is.
$1,999. So our power amps, $1,999 US.
Yes.
The preamp is $1,999 US, and the integrated is $1,699 US.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's sharp.
That's insane.
Yeah, that's wow.
Given the feature set and the aesthetic, and okay, if you want to go down the wiggly meter stuff too, there's nothing anywhere near that price that'll do it.
No, that's super impressive. Yeah. What I was going to ask was, clearly you love music, you love hi-fi, you know, it's how you ended up in the business, I assume, but you spoke very enthusiastically last night about your demo track choices and gave us a little insight into the choice, and it's all great music. You're clearly a fan. Do you play an instrument? Because you sort of were doing a little bit of air sort
of. Yeah, I'm a great air guitarist. I'm not a musician, and I say that proudly in this industry.
Well, no one in this industry.
Here's why.
Are they?
In this industry, it is a lot of musicians that on the side worked at a hi-fi shop because they wanted to be around the gear. My story couldn't be any different. I was in the golf industry. I was a golf pro in Branson, Missouri after college. My college roommate, my best friend, he was a musician.
Okay.
Worked at a musical instrument store, and at that time, Best Buy in the U.S. was putting high-end musical instrument stores as a test in big Best Buys around the country.
Yeah, okay, yep.
He got hired by them.
Right.
And in the winter, the golf course was closed for 3 months, and I'd hang out. Maybe I'd go to the pro shop and play cards with the old guys.
Yeah.
And he's like, you need to come work in this Magnolia Audio Video.
Okay.
And they'll pay you a lot of money and just sell stuff. He's like, you sell stuff all the time. And I was like, nah. And about year three, I said, I'll give it a go.
Yeah, okay.
And so I started part-time, loved it. Mm-hmm. And within 3 months, they were like, you know, we got a supervisor spot open to run the store. And I ran a golf course pro shop. So I was in management. I loved the management side of it. I was not instantly drawn to audio until I was doing inventory. I'll remember the morning. Inventory, 6 a.m. I'm not a morning person. I went to one of the systems, turned it on. John Mayer's Where the Light Is album was playing.
Mm-hmm.
And it just started. And by the time I was done doing inventory that day, the whole album went. And I went and bought the CD. I bought the Blu-ray. I used my promotion money to buy a Pioneer Elite receiver. I bought a pair of Bowers & Wilkins CM1s. Got home, some AudioQuest cables. I had my little apartment, plugged it in, and I bought that album on vinyl, and it changed my life. I remember hearing music instruments. I heard guitar. I wanted to instantly play guitar like John Mayer. Now, I bought a Fender because I got a discount in the music instrument store. So I bought this red Fender, a little amp, and I couldn't play Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. But I remember the drums. There was a track in that, the live version of Vultures, and the kick drum in the beginning, I just couldn't turn it up loud enough.
Because
for me, bass was what I had in my car.
Yes.
You know, and I'd play some hip hop and it felt cool. And then when you hear bass on an instrument that sounds accurate, whoa.
Yeah.
You know, I played that track Into the Void from Nine Inch Nails. Yeah. That was the first track I ever heard on a really high-end system. And again, I was in a, you know, treated room, and a very experienced designer, a guy named Perry Weber, played that track for me. And I was like, oh my God, I had no idea. And it changed my mind, right?
Yeah, I
hear it in the center, but there's no speaker there.
And then
I went down the journey, and that was my drug, and I couldn't stop from there on.
Stereonet.com. Forums. Classifieds. News and reviews. Opinion pieces. Mark Rushton has built one hell of a website, stereonet.com. Take a look today.
Amazing. It's great to hear those stories. I mean, my story is much simpler. I just like the look of the VU meters and the silver knobs. I think I'm attracted to like manufactured, beautifully crafted products to some degree. Although, of course, you know, the music is what gets you over the line. I mean, it was really actually all about the music. But and I think particularly in the 70s, it was like most stereos sounded really bad, so hi-fi stood out.
Just very quickly as a segue, there was a time a few years ago I was lecturing at the Conservatorium of Music, and my students would line up outside the lecture theatre, and invariably they'd have their laptops open or their phones going, and all you could hear was quack, 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 quack. And I'm thinking, Jesus, Mary and Joseph, how can you listen to that, you know?
Yeah.
So halfway through the lecture, this was really bugging me in my head, and I stopped them and I said, look, can I have a show of hands of how many people have a two-channel stereo system at home? And out of a class of 80, two hands went up.
Yeah.
And then the penny dropped for me. I'm thinking, shit, they have no idea. They've got no strong frame of reference on how good stereo can be. So I invited a few. I said, like, I've got a space Thursday night. I've got seating for four. Come on over to my place. I'll cook you a slap-up Italian meal, and we'll sit down in front of the... I can't say the brands, can I? No.
I think you can, as long as they're Klipsch and Onkyo, away.
Yeah, well, it wasn't Klipsch and Onkyo, sorry. Anyway, they sat down. The stylus hit the vinyl, and, you know, it's that whole cliche of the jaws dropping, the involuntarily forward-moving torsos, and, you know, the WTF bloody comic dialogue box above their heads. And I couldn't get them out of there. I had to chuck them out at 10:30.
Yeah.
And it's really, at that moment, I thought, shit, we've got a whole generation that have no idea about how good two-channel audio can sound. And I think we've still got that problem.
So I bring that up a lot, and I'm going to tie this back into kind of where I came from in this industry. The reason I say that I came from no musical instrument background, I say it with pride, as a trainer, it allows me to always go back to, I had no idea, and I need to simplify this for the average customer to eventually get them into that. So in my trainings, I think I said it last night, today's youth, you know, the kids these days, I'm 42 now, so I can say that, but their first audio experience is what? It's a pair of white pods that go in your ear made by a fruit company that makes cell phones. And when they want to listen better, they can take their music everywhere they want. All the songs are in their pocket. They want to listen better. They go back to the store and they buy the pro version of those pods from the fruit company making cell phones.
Yeah.
And that's great. And you can get an amazing audio experience from a really high-end pair of headphones. But when you're in open air, two-channel, and it's set up right, so you get the center image, the sound stage.
It's all sort of holographic.
It's emotional, right? Because your brain's like, I just don't understand what's happening here.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of things going on, I guess. I mean, there's the music and the way it moves you if it's, you know, it's your kind of music and you connect to it. But just to have your music presented so beautifully and rendered sort of in space, and just I guess the three of us here kind of take it for granted now, but it's interesting to recount that what got you there.
Yeah, you know, well, you mentioned earlier, again, I'm going to plug you guys, I'm not an audiophile, I do not consider myself one, but you mentioned about consumer electronics products and people assume how they're built. I don't think the average consumer thinks about it at all.
Oh, you know,
they have a brand and they just assume everything that goes in this was rainbows and unicorns made by that brand. Not we want to make this product at this price point with this margin rate, so we've got to find a vendor that makes this piece and a vendor that makes this piece.
Oh yeah.
And I'll say that for even the brands, the brands I've worked for in the past, and everyone's guilty of it.
Of course. Yeah, yeah.
Right? We've got a revenue problem. Let's make this piece. We think the industry's going here, but you don't use all the correct components all the time.
No.
It's the way it works, whether it could be out of stock or the vendors no longer exist.
Hmm.
So when it comes to the new products we're making, that's what makes me so excited about Onkyo designing AVR-style stuff. Like when I looked at the office, you can take our Flexus Core 100 or 200, and we take the lid off, and you've never seen a soundbar that looks like that. There are heat sinks in the front of the entry-level price point soundbar, the Core 100. And when you look at it, I can see what they were thinking. Mm. The heat sinks aren't in the back of the soundbar. They're in the front.
Yes.
Right? It's a cloth grill, so it breathes cold air the entire time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No
yeah.
fan needed.
Yes.
There's two upward firing 4-inch powered subwoofers in the entry level bar.
Mm-hmm.
So that bar, and I told this to our retailers that were there last night, every day in your store, there is at least one transaction that happens, and that is someone coming in, they buy the TV, they say yes to a soundbar,
mm-hmm.
and then they point at the box on the floor, and they go, do I have to have that? And the employee might say no.
Yeah, yeah.
It was voiced to have that,
yes.
So you've got to have the subwoofer. Otherwise, it's thin and hollow. Mm-hmm. It's probably louder than the TV, but probably close to the same.
Yeah.
So making an all-in-one bar where everything you need is there,
yes.
and whatever they play, right, two-driver soundbar, that does Dolby Atmos virtualization.
Mm.
So on the screen, on their whatever streaming service they're using for video, they see the logo of Atmos, and they know that they're getting a virtualized experience. That, at that price point, that is a win every day.
And just for the listeners, if you don't mind, what is that price point?
So you're at $399
yes.
for that entry-level soundbar, and we have two different flavors. We've yeah. got the black version, which is number one seller, but we also made a custom, what we call walnut version, where it's a light gray cloth surround,
yeah.
gray metal grills on top, which we use metal grills on a soundbar of that price point. And then you have a piece of walnut veneer on top. So it's a more aesthetically pleasing product
yeah,
for anyone that's design
into,
conscious,
into
but you're giving the
yeah.
customer something other than black.
Yeah.
Or just white.
Yes.
Because a lot of things today, that is a more modern take. And we make an all-in-one speaker called the One and the Three Plus. And the walnut version of that is the most popular version. And it's one of the few times that the non-black version of a speaker outsells it.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting how, you know, getting back to your point about rainbows and unicorns, which is a great metaphor, you know, and I'm not, you know, kind of being unkind to most of the consumers, but most consumers take all this for granted. They have no idea mm-hmm. what goes on in terms of R&D and certainly manufacturing and marketing. It's really, really interesting because I work in an audio store, and sometimes you'll get folk, and it cuts across demographic, whether they're a 22-year-old male or a 58-year-old professional female or a couple or whatever. They'll walk in and their mouths will open and they'll say, oh, I'm looking for brand blah 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 speaker. And my immediate question is, so, you know, and why are you looking at that brand? And you know, invariably they'll go, well, they've got a good name on the internet.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they do a ChatGTP or a Claude search. And of course, being a scraper, the scraper will just return, you know, kind of what's the biggest market impact we've got out there. And I said, well, okay, that may well be true, that this brand is good. It might be good for you too. We have it. But let's have a listen to a few things.
Yeah.
So, and again, there's all this kind of birch beating on their chest, going, you know, kind of, I'm not worthy, I'm not an audiophile, and I can't hear the difference.
Yeah, that's an unfortunate trait, isn't
it? But it is, and I'm thinking, well, hang on.
A license that you've got to pass?
Well, this
something?
Is bullshit. I mean, you've just, all I say to them is, look, you know, forget about that.
Yeah.
You've gone down too many Reddit rabbit holes. All you have to do is sit down, I'll play a track that you like, mm-hmm. and you know, and I'll switch between three speakers, and you tell me what sounds yeah. best to you.
Yeah, that's a good call. And when I managed a hi-fi shop, I had a team of, I think, 10 designers, 8 or 10. And they, a lot of them, wanted to play the hi-fi track.
Yep.
Dim the lights. Not that that's a great demo.
Yeah, yeah.
But on a Saturday, you've got shoppers.
Oh, yeah.
And they're in and out. And I would tell them, like, find what's really popular right now. And
yes.
this is a true story. At the time, Taylor Swift's 1989, and I bought it at the store on vinyl,
mm-hmm.
right? Which means it's just digital vinyl, but just pressed into wax.
Don't tell anyone.
Right? And we put it on the front system. And I go, just go play that. Let it play all the way through on the front side, flip it over, just watch what happens.
Yeah.
And you've got women with strollers, you've got kids, you've got the dad that's along with them. They get to walk into
yeah,
the
yeah.
the dim-lit room and listen to speakers.
Mm.
And you know, you talked about the demo and playing the speakers. You know, anytime a male was in there that was, man, I love this, but I got to talk to the wife.
Like,
don't go talk to the wife. You will do a terrible job of explaining what you just heard. I promise you that. You know, you're going to be looking at your feet, making circles. Like, honey, you know, I was just thinking we should add some audio. $20,000 worth. No, bring your wife in.
Absolutely.
Let her sit down, listen to her favorite song. Yes. One of my favorite stories was I did just that. And, you know, the wife came in, they did a demo on a Sunday. She was a pianist.
Mm-hmm.
And she couldn't believe that a speaker could reproduce the weight of piano.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, and she was like, yep, we'll take those.
Yeah,
and he was looking at a speaker that was the next step down.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
You know?
Yeah. This is a parallel to my student experience too. Like I'll use the phrase old timers because there's a lot of, you know, invariably older gentlemen who have grown up through the past decades and, you know, they love their audio, but they're in God's waiting room. And the question we have is an existential question in the industry is how do we make younger people fall in love with two-channel audio?
I've got an answer to that.
Let's hear it.
So we're currently doing this. We were very fortunate to partner with an influencer, Devin Turnbull. He goes by Ojas.
Yes, I wanted to talk
and
to you about that. Yeah.
What was great about the story is when I did my research into who is this guy, very unique individual, but he would set up in major cities. I believe it's in New York, the one I remember, but he would rent these big rooms out, set up a two-channel system on a horn loaded speaker, two-way speaker, play some vinyl or possibly some streaming, and these younger influencer kids would line up around the block because it would be on Instagram and all these things. I want to come listen.
Yes.
And it got unbelievably popular. And then I don't know if we reached out to him or he reached out to
us. Well, see, that was my question.
But we partnered and
Ojas
speaker.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I wondered which way that went.
It's either bare wood.
Yeah,
with
simple box,
sand cast horn on top.
Yes, yep.
And the first time I saw it, I was like, "That kind of looks like an Erector set,
on a
box."
And it's a bit of that.
But it's one of these things too that the longer you're around it, the more you're like, "Man, I don't know, that's pretty freaking rad." And that's how we did a limited run, and every one of them is sold out. We're currently doing a second one.
Yes,
and they're amazing.
Get your orders in now, basically. Yeah.
It's a unique looking speaker, and it's technology that we used back in 1946.
So this is I love this because it's he adds mystique, charm, art, a little bit of Andy Warholness.
Mystique's a great word for
you
it.
Know to the whole thing, but it attracts a different audience, right? I've got a couple of questions. One of them was how the relationship kind of kicked off, whether it was he spoke to you or vice versa. And I suppose I thought from a marketer's point of view, you might have contacted him, but then was he already using your Klipsch parts, or was it just that it happened to look like a Klipsch speaker?
I am not as versed as like our marketing team is with that, but I do know he was very into horn-loaded speakers.
Yeah, okay.
So he already knew about Klipsch and what we did. And
he was no doubt a fan, yeah.
Yeah, so the partnership was just kismet.
Yeah, and the second thing was, so I have briefly heard the speaker, but not in a very good environment. I think it was at Munich last year or something, but it was not a great room. But and it was only sort of playing in the background, I think. So it doesn't sound like your other heritage models, the Ojas. How would you describe it? Has it got a certain charm?
Yeah, so it does not sound like the heritage product.
Okay.
It is a unique sound. It is the definition of simplified. You know, we talked about PWK, and it should have a no bullshit sticker right on the side
because there's
nothing else in it. So you put very little power.
Doesn't fit with the aesthetic that Devin's working on that.
It just sings. And I did hear it. I was in the room in Munich running demos.
Yep.
And I was blown away by
the
sound.
I didn't hear it properly. We're probably talking about the same room if we're talking last year, but there was a lot of people in there, was a lot of talking. you know, Mr. Daiko would be so happy with me now telling him.
I had it alone telling the day before the show opened.
Yeah, okay. So you heard it properly.
Yeah, and really listen to it. Yep. And I was just floored by it. And I say this because when you've been with high-end audio brands for a long time, you believe all the stories, and they all have a unique sound.
Yes.
But when it comes to what we do at Klipsch with efficiency, right, making sure that nothing overworks to give you effortless volume and detail, he took that. And so I believe it sounded probably better than anything he's built in the past.
Yeah.
At that size or price point. But yeah, it was a very unique sound, and people couldn't get enough of it. I could play them, you know, we had the Fortes there, we had Reference Premiere, and they sounded great. We had RF7s in that room, and they wanted, what is that thing with the metal horn on top?
I want
to know.
That's just,
you know, that's the unique thing about audio is people do. My dad was a chef. They eat with their eyes.
Yes.
So when you see a speaker that's beautiful or just what your taste are.
Well, it's this slightly artful, bare bones functionality to it that's kind of attractive. and obviously it works for him. It's what he likes. And he's created this. And so you were saying last night, and I saw something on Instagram that he's in Milan or something at the moment.
Yeah, right now.
Yeah, showing it off to an Italian audience of Americans or whoever's there. We're going to have a quick break. Thank you, Marcus, David. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the Heritage range, which I guess has been improved over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And let's touch on that. So, yeah, back in a second.
Find the sound of your life by crafting a quality stereo system with the Hi-Fi Shop. Featuring all the brands you know and love. Riga turntables, Bowers & Wilkins loudspeakers, Exposure Electronics, amplifiers and CD players from the UK, and of course Sonos Faber loudspeakers from Italy. The Hi-Fi Shop helps you create your sound. Visit the team at hifishop.com.au. Soundstage Australia, Edgar Kramer writes a magnificent, highly detailed and careful review. Great photography, interesting products, and over at soundstageaustralia.com you can see those.
We're back in the room with David and Marcus. Dave's got a question about OJAS.
Yeah, look, it's a fascinating product. I'm just wondering what the production run of it's like.
So our first partnership, we did a production run of a few hundred, and then because of demand, did a second run.
Mm-hmm.
This round is going to be a single run, from what I understand, and it'll be, I believe, I apologize if I get it wrong, guys, but I believe it's around 500 to 600 units.
Okay, wow. So they'll probably go in an eye blink.
They will be gone.
And what's the recommended price US? What are they selling for retail?
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
I do not know the current price
That's
of the
cool.
new one.
Yeah. Okay.
The previous model, I believe, was 7,500.
Okay, cool.
The Heritage range, now, speaking of Munich, did you, correct me if I'm wrong, because I must be losing it. I can't remember where I heard these enormous speakers that you make, the big suckers.
The Jubilee.
Is it Jubilee? Did you have those in a special room at Munich last year?
No, I believe it was the year before.
Okay, so what? But yeah, okay, that's where I must have heard them, and that's probably why I couldn't work out whether it was last year, because it wasn't. Wow, they have got this effortlessness, this space-filling sort of, I don't even know how to describe it. It's a different presentation to, you used to work at Martin Logan.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different presentation to that, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is.
I mean, they both have their own charm, right?
Yeah.
But wow, I don't know.
But you're onto something there, because it's similar, you know, if you listen to an electrostat panel, whether it's Martin Logan or one of the other brands,
yeah.
There's an eeriness to a stat panel.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? It's this clear panel.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm looking at it, and I don't see it moving, but I hear this soundstage and center image and depth.
Mm.
And that's what the Heritage products do. I mean, obviously Jubilee, but because of the efficiency story, which again is the opposite of what a lot of audio brands do. We're not maniacally hunting for distortion. We're making sure that the distortion from the amp doesn't overwork, which is where most of the noise comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just effortless volume, which means the details there with... And that's where the airiness you mentioned.
Well, that's the joy of the super efficient loudspeaker is that it's not working. Yeah. It's hardly moving to create all this sound, and clearly there's not this underlying mechanical thuddery going on trying to, you know, create noise. Yeah. It's I guess that's, I mean, you know, I'm supposed to know about these things as some kind of loudspeaker designer, but it's
really good.
It's great. It's
really good at making woofers.
Yeah.
Our subs are you know, woofers on our speakers and our subwoofer line, that's something that is just top notch.
Because
you put it price point against any, and there's some wonderful manufacturers out there, nothing against them. But you go toe to toe for the same price, it's tough to beat. The output is incredible.
Well, I mean, to some degree, you know, you as a big company making a broad range of audio products, you have it does get to a point where you kind of are hard to beat, mm-hmm. because you have, you know, a volume of materials that you're chomping through. You buy at a slightly better price or whatever, and you make everything. You know, very efficiently, and you've got some very, very smart people working for you on the design front to make the design great in the first place.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as value for money, mm-hmm. Klipsch is clearly very hard to beat.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, one of my favorite things, having worked with other manufacturers, the stories tend to align. You know, at the end of the day, we're trying to give you what the artist intended.
Mm.
Well, when the artist plays their music live, you're not hearing the artist. You're hearing a speaker that is draped from the rafters, usually in a line array.
Correct.
And that's a horn-loaded speaker.
Yep. Funny.
And so when you talk about, I love concerts, I love going to the movies, you're listening to a horn-loaded product. So when you put a horn-loaded product in your living room at a much cheaper price point, you're getting effortless detail and the volume you'd expect out of, you know, going to the cinema or a concert.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Hey, which is your favorite model? You must have one, right? Or do you not? Because they're all so good, right?
Yeah, everything we make is my favorite model. It's evolved over the 3 years. So I love what the Forte brings to a customer, the Forte 4, because the big bass reflex driver on the back effortlessly gives you a lot of bass when needed.
Mm-hmm.
I like, my favorite speaker is easily the La Scala.
Yeah. Why is that?
So it's because of the uniqueness. It is horn loaded all the way through,
mm-hmm.
and the more songs I listen to it, the more I love it.
Yeah.
So like one of my favorite albums is Joe Bonamassa live at Royal Albert Hall. And when I played one song from that yesterday. I don't know if you guys were there for that.
Oh, yeah. No,
but on La Scala, you get the separation of a three-way speaker. And then that box, because I've been around enough speakers, I get technical with that. The top box is completely separate from the bottom cabinet.
Yes.
So there's no interaction there.
Yep.
So no matter how much detail is in, it's all separated. And the horn-loaded woofer in that unbelievably heavy, dense cabinet has a thickness and a texture to the bass that I don't hear on any other speaker.
Mm-hmm.
The K-horn would be the closest thing, but the K-horn is massive, and I can't fit it in my townhome. But La Scala, for me, like that's the one. And I've heard last year our sales meeting, we updated it so you can do tri-amping now. We have the active crossover technology we brought down from Jubilee.
That's what you're talking about, the La Scala. What I noticed last night. I had a look behind, and what the hell is going on there?
Exactly.
There's a lot of doings.
We updated the K-horn,
so
AK7, and the La Scala, which is the AL6, to do tri-amping. And we had three Onkyo Icon stereo amps, the preamp on La Scala. And I mean, and we were in this massive ballroom with a crystal chandelier at a Pinehurst. And we would just rip that thing. And what was great about it is our dealers, you know, I'd walk in to check on the room, make sure it was locked at midnight, 1 a.m. And we had these guys from South America that were in there like, no, I'll make sure I shut the door. And I bet they were in there till 2 a.m.
Is that right?
Just listening to a lot of jazz.
Yeah, okay.
But that system for me, for that price point, that's a life-changing system. You're not, it doesn't sound like anything else because you can't get it without that horn-loaded bottom end. And that is... It's so unique, and that's what I really love. I don't own a lot of subwoofers, and I listen to a lot of stuff that's just rock, acoustic, so there's not an instrument that plays down to subwoofer level for what I listen to.
Yeah.
And so I love to have just two speakers and my amplifier stack. And I, La Scala would be it.
Okay. Well, you've actually answered the question because, you know, most people don't want to be drawn on that, you know. I was taken with those giant ones, the Jubilees. I, you know, nowhere to fit them. I mean, you know, I mean, most people don't probably. Probably don't either.
Even the La Scalas, which aren't, you know, in absolute terms, the biggest speakers in the world by a long shot, but they're certainly not the smallest.
They've got presence.
they do.
If you're in the room, you know they're there with you.
Well, they're actually quite deep as well, aren't they?
They are.
They're quite a hunk of box. So, I guess the future, to sort of wrap up, unless there's some particular things you'd like to bring up, Marcus, but. So the future of Klipsch is clearly broad-ranging and strong and kind of exciting. What do you see as the highlights? What sort of...
So we talked about this. Today's customer, the new customer, how do we bring younger people or even people in their 30s that are now successful and they've got some money and they want to...
Yeah.
You know, I love music. They travel, they go to concerts, and they want to bring that experience home. But I need it to be, you know, all in one. You know, our powered monitors, now that they do Dolby Atmos virtualization, again, I'll go back to that vocal clarity that I'm getting out of these powered monitors is incredible. And that's important.
Yes.
But I go back to, you know, we talked about young customers. It doesn't have to be music. You know, our ProMedia Lumina speakers, the ProMedia prior computer speaker was one of the best-selling products we've ever made. Sorry, I talked a lot last night for our listeners.
Yes, you did.
A little horse in the boy. So that was one of our best-selling products of all time.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, Microtractrix, horn-loaded, and it has a Klipsch sound, but on my computer. Well, today, with ProMedia Lumina, the gamer is not listening to a lot of music. It's the music in the background of the game.
Yep.
But if they're doing a racing game, I want it to sound like I'm at an F1 race. If I'm doing... a first-person shooter game, or you know, anything from the games that never end. They always have this music in the background, you know, and they stay on for three days in a row.
Yep.
But it brings you closer to your favorite content. But my thing with vinyl, why did vinyl make a comeback? Because it's cool, it's fun, and it makes me feel closer to my favorite artist.
Yep.
I don't have a lot of vinyl, but all my favorite artists, I have it.
Yep.
Even if it's not analog recorded,
official,
you know.
Yeah,
I have it because I like it. It makes it fun. So today's customer, we want them to have an experience at a price point that is not entry level. We're not trying to make cheap products, but where they pay for a premium product, gives them everything they want, and they're going to have it for a long time. And that's the Flexus soundbar, the new ProMedia Lumina, our powered monitors. They're coming in at these mid to, you can go very premium price point, but it's everything you need in one. Because if you think of the fives, well, if I bought an AVR and a good pair of Reference Premier speakers, some speaker wire, and set it up, I mean, I'm getting pretty close to that price point anyway.
Yep.
Everything's all in one. And the benefit of powered products these days is, an engineer, that's kind of the dream. You know the driver you're using.
Yep.
You know the cabinet
and
the amplifier. So voicing of it is
effortless. Well, it's easier. Look, you know, preaching to the choir here, I've owned and used dozens of actives over the years, and done right, done correctly, they're astonishing, because there's nothing on the planet that has that footprint and has that SPL. The thing that I really like
is the scale for the size.
That's what I'm on about. I mean, you know, when you played the last...
And the accuracy, right?
The last pair of actives last night, the nines?
Yeah, the nines. Yeah. I had a pair of those.
I was, you know... And I'm a pretty jaundiced kind of guy with a lot of speakers, thinking, okay, kind of, there's got to be a flaw here. But for the money, they're astonishing, man.
Yeah.
They're seriously good.
Yeah.
They're...
My first favorite speaker when I got here,
as an
outsider, was the 7s. The 7s in Walnut, I was like, that's a beautiful speaker. And it looks balanced. You know, you see like a balanced product, it's not too wide, not too tall.
Yep.
That's it. And then I got a pair of the McLaren 9s, which I have in my... I'm a car guy. So I spend a lot of time in my garage, and I have them down there, and that is my, my system. But I run it out of the TV right in there, one wire, yeah, and it's everything I need.
I heard them at a show. I was astounded. They huge sound.
It's massive sound. Yeah.
I was going to. I mean, I think the thing with Active is that it's another flavour of audio. Mm. That's the thing, exactly. Is that because, you know, it's all very well going, yeah, that's the way to do it, but it is a way to do it. It's the way to do it if you're trying to get the most accurate, biggest sound out of the smaller space, most efficiently and with the least amount of boxes and stuff. But I'll go back to the Jubilees and say that a big stack of Onkyo with the Jubilees is a very different and very enjoyable presentation.
Well, we were talking about Martin Logan and, you know, kind of...
Yet another presentation.
You know, again...
Style of presentation.
A few episodes ago, we were talking about all the panels I used to own.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I've kind of had and experienced all these topologies, and they all have their discrete secret sources, as you're talking about. So none of them are essentially right or wrong. It's just like, you know, kind of it's... Hey,
as we always say, it's kind of like Wayne.
Wayne. I had Wayne this morning.
Too much
Wayne.
Wayne last night. Too much free Wayne.
Well, it kind of is. It, at the end of the day, it's, you know, kind of we can be as empirical as we want and say, well, this is flat and there's no distortion and blah, blah, blah. But if the person doesn't like the sound of it, they move to the next one. So that's the great fun about this hobby.
Yeah,
no, there's lots of choices.
And look, so a couple of things to wrap up on. Speaking of cars, although a Nissan Patrol is definitely not a car, but don't get me started. But your offsider last night said a very interesting thing, and I apologise for not remembering his name, the local gentleman who mentioned he went to the Nissan function.
Harrison. Yeah.
Hell of an interesting guy. And he... So he was kind of impressed being absorbed into the inner world of the automotive industry briefly. The point is, they got this giant truck with a hell of a stereo in it. And like he said, they're listening to their music and then they're loving it. And then they get home and they've either got nothing or a phone or... So it's such a... From a Klipsch marketing point of view, it's a great... It's cool as hell, isn't it? I mean, you know, because we just said the hardest thing about flogging hi-fi equipment or turning a new audience on is giving them a demo. Mm-hmm.
The thing with doing the car is where a lot of people listen to... everything.
Well, they get a chance to listen.
Yeah, they get to crank it up as loud as they want.
And
they
can sing
at the top of their lungs and no one hears them.
Yep.
But when you're building a system like that, that can be a double-edged sword. You mentioned a system you had before, the four-letter word, and you thought it was crap.
I wasn't.
That's a premium.
It's not that I thought it. It was.
Yeah, that's it was premium
worse
upgrade,
than dreadful.
Though, for that car.
Yeah.
And if it's not good, well, that's... You did not gain a customer.
No, they blew it.
With these new systems... One, they're unique based on the vehicle they're in, and they're refined for that. So the Patrol 12-speaker system, it is a very similar to like what we do with the Infiniti system, which is that's kind of our flagship, Reference Premier. That system's incredible and is refined. When you go to a Ram truck, that system is... That's a RF7, slap you in the face, subwoofers, right? I want to hear the V8 roll, and then I want... Motley Crue playing. I want subs going, and it's going to melt my face off.
Yes.
So the team's doing a phenomenal job of making sure you
fitting the personality of the audio system to the vehicle. Yeah. Now that's great. I love that, David. I've got one final question. I'm going to reserve it. Final thoughts.
Yeah, it's and I've got to be frank here. I'm really delighted that there's this kind of renaissance. With Klipsch, but even more excitedly with Onkyo. It's
more of a renaissance in a way, isn't it?
Because
that's
my point.
Other than the AVRs, which are clearly very good.
Yeah, I mean, but they've been chugging along for years, and in our store we sell the Onkyo AVRs, and they never come back. They're reliable as hell, which is great. But the new generation of separates looks really exceptional. And as much as I love the pre and power things, you know that... The thing that really excited me most last night was the integrators.
Yeah.
They're just bullshit value for money.
It's 110 watts of AB. The power amp's 130.
Yeah.
You know, you're barely losing anything.
Box. In the integrated amp.
It's less than half.
Are you referring to the integrated streaming box?
Yeah.
Which is probably class Is that got Class D technology?
Well, the Muse series is Class
D.
Smaller chassis.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got the screen.
Such a smart little unit.
One of my favorite features on that, this is going to sound stupid, but on the front of it is a button, physical button, that changes the displays. So it goes from up and down vintage style
meters, side to side like the icon.
You have a full screen for your inputs.
Yes.
And then the third, or the fourth one is your album art. So if you're on the network, you've got your metadata from your album. Today's customer wants to know what they're listening to.
I'm impressed with those. We'll talk about that in the future.
Indeed, we
will. Final question. It's got nothing to do with audio. You said you're a car guy. We're all car guys in this room. Aren't we?
Yes, we are. Very much so.
David's had some very interesting cars. What are you driving? What do you like?
I currently have a, and I'll have this car forever. It took me a really long time to track it down. I've got a 2013 911 manual.
Wow.
And
it's, yeah, it's my dream car in the right color.
What color?
It's called Agate Gray, but it's like a dark charcoal gray with white stripes down the doors with the red Porsche inside.
Jesus Christ. This is not the answer I expected.
Yeah. But I've had...
I was imagining Camaro.
I'm an American guy. I went to Ozark Tech for college, and I did automotive technology.
Yeah, okay.
So shout out OTC. But I had a Camaro with a roll cage when I was in college.
Imagine my surprise.
I had a Trans Am. I had two Corvettes. Then I went to a Jeep phase where I had motorcycles.
Yeah, okay.
And then I got into German cars. I bought an old 85 Mercedes 500 SL.
Oh, my God.
$3,000.
That's insane.
I just moved to Atlanta. It was on a dealership, and it was the owner's car. That he was like, just get rid of it, and they had it for $6,000.
How many? I was going to say, how many miles did it have?
It had about 85,000 miles.
Get the fuck out of here!
And I paid $3,200. It's the only car I've ever paid with a debit card.
Do you know how much those are worth now?
Yeah, I know. And so I went into restore mode, and I drove it for a while. I did my store visits when I was a market manager for Magnolia. Yeah, it was awesome. But my first car was an 83 turbo diesel station wagon, the 300 TD.
Yeah.
And it's not cool when you're 16, but I look back now like, man, I would love that car.
The TDs will survive an atomic bomb.
What they don't survive is driving it off of a bridge on a gravel road. That's what I did. My dad was so mad. But
what's
great is I hit the cul-de-sac, and the car kind of ramped up on it. The engine popped through the hood, and then it started to teeter, and it fell over. But the car's so long, it never went in the creek. It stretched across the creek, and so I'm about 3 feet off the water. My buddy undoes his seatbelt and is leaning against the door, and we're sideways. And I'm about to say, don't touch the handle.
Yeah.
And he opens it and falls straight. And I'm hanging out there just dying laughing. But it was, And I look back like, man, I wish I had that car still. That was so great.
Yeah. Pre-crashed. It was in better shape at that point. Hey, thank you, Marcus. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your insights.
Thank you guys for having me.
And thank you for your amusing car story.
I'm going to tell you one last thing.
Yeah, please.
Oh, yeah, please.
So
do.
I love a good dad joke. I put a lot of them into my... trainings, and I'm only saying this to warn the listeners, because the guys that know me know the tone changes when I go into dad joke mode. So I'm going to start a story. So at Premium Audio Company, we will build anything audio wise that a customer could want, anything. And one day I'm walking into our audio designer's office, and I hear some music playing, and I'm looking around. I don't see any active speakers playing. And I look over, and it's coming from the printer.
Okay.
And I looked over at the engineer. I was like, did you put a speaker in the printer? And he goes, nah, it's just the paper jamming.
Fade out.
Fade out.
Dear, I have many dad jokes, but I can't remember any of them right now because I also have no memory. But they're pretty bad as well. They're not as
that's up there with the baddest.
thank you, David. Thank you, Marcus. Thank you, myself. It's been a great time. thank you for joining it. Thank you for last night. I was very taken with just the amount of excellent products you've got, such a broad range. It's a big company. It looks like it has a very stable, exciting future. It's great for both brands. Thank you again.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Cheers.
Pleasure.